Lily Green and Briggs Eden had nothing to do with the other. Give Dad time. He'll make the right decision.
He will.
She pulled away and poured the dregs of her coffee into the sink, rinsing it clean.
What are you doing today?
Moving cattle to the Forest Service.
Then I'll get out of your hair. I just wanted to see your face. You've been scarce lately.
I saw you Tuesday.
For a whole 5 minutes to drop off the mail.
She turned and walked out of the kitchen, pausing before she could disappear down the hallway to the front door.
Bring Winslow around for dinner one night.
That's not really our kind of relationship, Mom.
Oh, I've got a pretty good idea of your kind of relationship, but you can bring her by regardless. Your father speaks highly of her, and I'd like to meet her. I suspect she'll be part of this community long after you two quit one another. Covey is her only family left now that her parents are dead, and I'd like her to know that she's got more than her grandfather pulling for her to make Quincy home.
Hold up. There was a lot there to appreciate. My mother's warm and inviting heart, but my head was wrapped around something else. Her parents are dead?
For a couple of years now, I think. They were killed in an accident in Bozeman.
But I'd just seen their photo in her office last week. I'd met them years ago at Willie's when they'd been here to visit Covey. How had I been sleeping with Wynn and not known that her parents had been killed? I didn't know.
Covey didn't talk much about it. He didn't tell many people in town that they died.
Really? Why?
He lost his son and his daughter-in-law. I believe they were very close. We all handle our grief differently. I think Covey went through a period of denial. Pretending life was the same was his way of coping. And he spent a lot of time in Bozeman with Winslow. He mentioned to your dad once that she was having a hard time.
What the actual fuck? I hated that my mother knew more about this than I did. Why hadn't Wynn told me? Maybe she'd suspected that I already knew. Still, not a hint that they were gone. In fact, she hadn't spoken much about her parents other than to remind me that her father had grown up in Quincy. I opened my mouth to ask Mom more about it, but the doorbell rang.
I'll get it.
She disappeared down the hallway, and when the door opened, I recognized Jim's voice.
I think he was just grabbing a cup of coffee,
Mom said.
Griffin?
Coming. I chugged the rest of my cup, then strode down the hallway and out the door where my men were waiting. After grabbing my favorite Stetson, I waved goodbye to Mom and headed for the barn. Everyone had saddled their horses, so while they visited, I made my way to Jupiter's stall. Hey, fella. I ran my hand over his buckskin cheek, letting him nuzzle me for a moment before I went through the motions I'd done 1,000 times, combing him off before strapping on his saddle. Jupiter had been my horse for the past decade. He was the best I'd ever had, strong and confident with a tender heart. On days I needed to clear my head, he'd do it with me. We'd ride off through the valley or into the forest, and I'd unload the burdens with the steady sway of his canter. I led him from his stall, snagging my favorite pair of chaps from a hook on the wall. Then together, we walked into the sunshine. Ready for a long day? Jupiter answered by nudging my shoulder. I grinned, ruffling the black tuft of hair between his ears. Me too. As promised, the day was long. We rode for miles, moving the cattle into their summer grazing home in the section of the mountains that we leased from the Forest Service. The animals would have more grass than they could consume, and with them there, they'd help alleviate the risk of a forest fire. On the return trip, I broke apart from the guys. They headed to the stables at Mom and Dad's place, where they all kept their horses. It was a benefit of working on our ranch, free boarding, while I continued on alone to my place. Home was a happy sight. So was the woman standing beside her Durango in my driveway. I swung off Jupiter, my legs stiff as I walked to Wynn. Wearing a pair of jeans and a simple sage green blouse, she was breathtaking.
When I show up here, I'm going to need you to be wearing that.
She pointed from my hat to my chaps to my boots.
Every time.
I chuckled as she moved into my space. I've been in the saddle all day. I smell like a horse.
I don't care.
She stood on her toes, going for my lips. I bent, ready to take her mouth, when my horse shoved his nose between us. "Do you mind?" Wynne laughed.
"Who's this?"
"Jupiter."
"Jupiter. Interesting name for a horse."
Eloise named him. Dad bought 8 horses 10 years ago. She was into some science project for school about the solar system, so she named them all after planets.
"I like it."
She reached up, hesitating for a second, before touching his cheek.
"Hey, Jupiter."
He nuzzled her palm. My horse was as smart as they came. He knew quality attention when he got it. "Let me get him put away. Head on in, make yourself at home." I took the kiss I needed, then winked and escorted Jupiter to the barn. After getting him settled, I returned to the house, finding her on the porch, rocking in one of the chairs. She had a beer in her hand, and another ready for me. What a sight she was. Most days like this, I'd come home to an empty house and pray that no one showed up at my doorstep. I craved the time alone, the time to decompress. But I hadn't had a night alone in a week, and at the moment, I didn't want one.
"I figured you'd want one of these."
She motioned to the beer as I walked up the porch. "Yeah." I sat down, tipping the beer to my lips and quenching my thirst. She took her own drink as her eyes raked over my legs.
"You are sexy on that horse, cowboy."
"What's it going to earn me?"
"Take a shower and you'll find out."
I laughed, leaning over the arm of my chair and waving her closer. Then I fit my lips to the corner of her mouth before I left her on the porch and went inside to shower. With a towel to my hair and wearing only a pair of jeans, I came out of the master bedroom and checked my phone. I'd missed 7 calls and a dozen texts waited to be read. They were all from family members, and though I should find out what was happening, put out whatever fires had started today, I ignored it all and went in search of Wynne. I'd expected to find her inside, but through the glass windows in the living room, I saw her sitting in the same porch chair, rocking gently as her eyes stayed glued to the trees and the mountain peaks rising beyond. She looked at peace, maybe more at peace than she'd ever been, even in sleep. My heart skipped. The towel fell from my hand. My hand came to my sternum. She was perfect in that chair. So beautiful, I wanted this view every night. Fuck. We were supposed to burn out. We should have burned out already. I needed it to burn out. My focus had to stay on this ranch, on my family. Yet it didn't stop me from walking outside, picking her up out of that chair, and carrying her to my bedroom. We would burn out. Just not yet.
Chapter 13. Winslow.
"Did he give you any trouble?"
Mitch asked. "Not unless you count him crying the whole ride here." I glanced through the jail cell's steel bars to the man I'd hauled in for drunk driving. He sat on the cot, his head in his hands, still crying. Dumbass. Maybe this would teach him a lesson. Oh, how I hated the 4th of July. "Hopefully he'll be the last," I said. Mitch sighed.
"It's still early. I bet we bring in one or two more."
"But we're out of space. All 5 cells were occupied by other dumbasses."
"We'll double up if we have to. Last year on the 4th, we had to triple a few cells."
"Let's just hope no one gets hurt."
"Agreed."
He nodded.
"But hey, on the bright side, no bar fights this year. 2 years ago, we busted up a brawl at Old Mill. That was a cluster. And last year, we had 6 girls who got into it at Big Sam's. That was even worse. Girls fight mean."
I laughed, following him out of the holding area. "Yes, we do." The bars in town were closed. The rodeo was over. Now, hopefully, we just had to deal with the idiots who hadn't gone home, the ones who'd decided to take the party elsewhere and cause trouble. Mitch would be here to lock them up when the other officers brought them in. The keys attached to his belt jingled as we walked. Of the officer team, Mitch was my favorite. His tall and stout frame made him an intimidating man, but I'd learned in my time here that he was gentle and kind. Smiles aimed my way were rare in the station. They normally only came from Janice and Mitch. He always had one waiting when I walked into the station in the early morning hours before the shift change. As we passed the last cell, the man who'd been hauled in first was on his cot, snoring louder than a bear. Mitch simply shook his head and hit the button on the wall to signal we were ready to come out. Alan was waiting on the other side to buzz us through the secure door. He'd swapped out of day shift to help tonight on patrols. Every member of my staff had been on duty today, even the office crew. The county sheriff and his team had come into town to help manage the crowds and patrol the streets. The Quincy Independence Day celebration had been a whirlwind of activity. We'd been prepping for it all week, and in just a few more hours, it would be over. Thank God. I yawned and dug a set of keys out of my pocket. They belonged to the cruiser I'd taken out for a 2-hour patrol shift. It's all yours, I handed them to Mitch. He and Alan would be taking the next patrol shift together.
Thanks, Chief.
Winslow, I corrected. He nodded, but I suspected he'd keep calling me Chief.
Heading home?
Yeah. I yawned again and glanced at the clock on the wall. 3 in the morning. I'd come in at 4, yesterday morning. Call me if you need anything. He nodded.
Will do.
Night, Alan.
Night, Chief, he said. See you Monday.
That's technically tomorrow, isn't it?
Guess so. He scrubbed a hand over his face. I'm not cut out for the night shift.
Me neither. I waved, ducking into my office to collect my purse before heading outside, where my Durango had been parked for nearly 24 hours. Sliding behind the wheel, I let my shoulders slump. What a day. The festivities had started with a parade on Main. My team had barricaded the road and put out detour signs for the traffic needing to pass through Quincy. Officers had been stationed at both ends of the street to guide pedestrians and wave through cars. I'd missed most of the parade, floats and horses and classic cars, too busy walking the sidewalks and surveying the crowd. Cleanup had followed, and I'd found 30 minutes to scarf down an early lunch at my desk. Afterward, while half of the officers had set out in cruisers on patrol, the rest of us had made our way to the fairgrounds to prepare for the evening rodeo. During the barrel racing, I'd visited with the county sheriff, learning more about him and his team. During the steer wrestling, I'd escorted a drunken cowboy who'd been vomiting behind the porta-potties off the grounds to sleep it off in the back of his horse trailer. And during the team roping, I'd helped a little girl who'd gotten separated from her family find her parents. But toward the end of the night, as the sun had set and with it the temperature, I'd found a quiet moment to stand against the fence and breathe. The overhead lights had cloaked the arena in their blinding glow and obscured the stars above. Bull riding had been the final event, and as young men had climbed on the back of massive beasts, hoping to make it 8 seconds, I'd focused on the stands, searching for Griffin. He'd sat toward the bottom rail, and even from the opposite end of the fairgrounds, his smile had made my heart skip. Every row had been crammed, the space around Griffin no different. I'd recognized his family sitting close by. The Edens had drawn nearly as much attention as the bull riders. People had passed, waving and stopping for a quick hello. Like he'd known I was watching, Griff had searched the fence line and found me. In a sea of people, above the noise and below the lights, one look from him and the world had melted away. The 4th of July meant trouble. In that moment, with that single look, I'd known I was in trouble. Casual was becoming a craving. We'd sailed past uncomplicated weeks ago. Whatever boundaries we'd erected had been destroyed. I'd peeled my life away from Skylar's after 8 years together. 8 years. Yet the idea of letting go of Griffin seemed impossible, and it had only been a month. As he'd stared at me and taken a sip from his beer, that sexy grin had widened. Griff had shifted to dig his phone from a pocket, and mine had dinged moments later with a text. Come over when you're done tonight. That text had been hours ago. After the rodeo, my team had migrated to the park by the river, where the county firemen had set up a fireworks show. We'd had the area prepped earlier in the week, making sure there were ways for our cruisers and an ambulance to get in and out. Like the parade and rodeo, I hadn't gotten to watch much of the show. I'd caught the tail end of the finale, but that was only after chasing a group of teenagers away from the water where they'd been vaping. I hadn't seen Griffin at the park, not that I'd had time to search him out. Soon after the park had emptied, I'd returned to the station and taken my scheduled patrol shift. Apparently, this was not something the former chief had done. When I'd rattled off the schedule at our prep meeting, including my name in the rotation, every officer but Mitch had given me a strange look. So, no different than most days. By rights, I should go home and crash. I hadn't slept in my own bed for a week, opting for Griffin's instead. But as I pulled out of the station's parking lot, I aimed my wheels toward the Eden Ranch. The porch light was on when I parked outside Griff's house. My eyelids were heavy and my footsteps leaden. I trudged up the stairs, expecting to find him in bed and asleep. But before I could touch the door handle, it opened.
Hey.
His arms opened. I fell into them, sagging against his strength. Hi.
Everything go okay?
For the most part.
Any accidents?
No. And I prayed when I woke up in the morning that would still be the case. Work had been my savior today. It had kept me from thinking of a summer night not unlike this one.
Come to bed.
He kissed my hair. Okay, but you have to do all the work tonight. He chuckled, then bent and swept me into his arms. Too tired to overthink it, I curled into his chest and let him carry me to the bedroom. He stripped me out of my clothes, but left my panties on. Then he yanked the t-shirt from his body and pulled it over my head.
Sleep.
Okay. I wanted sex. Tomorrow. Tonight, I burrowed into the pillows, drawing in his scent, and only stayed awake long enough to feel his warm chest curl into my back. Then I crashed, grateful that tonight, of all nights, I wasn't alone. I gasped awake. A silent cry tore at my throat. My eyes were open, but I couldn't see Griffin's dark bedroom. The blood was too thick. I squeezed my eyes shut. Please stop. The blood oozed. Griffin shifted behind me but didn't wake as I slid out from beneath his heavy arm and padded across the hardwood floor, closing the door to escape his bedroom. I should have expected it. Tonight, I should have known there'd be a nightmare. But foolishly, I'd thought sheer exhaustion would win, that I'd sleep those last few hours of the day away. The microwave clock showed 4:32. I'd slept an hour at most. The faint rays of dawn lit up the horizon, but stars still clung high in the sky. Grabbing a throw from the couch, I made my way to the front door, easing it open to slip outside. The porch's boards were cold against my bare feet, the rocking chair damp from the night's dew. I wrapped the blanket around my shoulders, then sank into the seat, letting the fresh morning air chase away the scent of death. Griffin's house sat in the center of a clearing. Trees surrounded it on every side, but they were far enough away that from the porch, I could see the mountain range in the distance. It jutted into the horizon, the peaks glowing with sunlight and snow. At their tips, the sky was a yellow so clear it was almost white. Sunrise. A new day. The 5th of July. The mark of another year alone. I missed them. I hoped I'd never stop.
Hey.
Griff's rugged voice cut through the quiet. Hey, I turned, finding him at the door I hadn't heard open. You should go back to bed. He shook his head, his hair a mess, and stepped outside wearing only a pair of boxer briefs. He waved me out of the chair. I couldn't go back to sleep, not now. But he hadn't slept any longer than I had, so I'd go back to bed and lie there until he drifted off, then sneak out to the porch again. But when I stood, he didn't lead me inside. Instead, he took the blanket from my shoulders, tossed it around his own, then stole my chair.
Sit down.
He patted his lap. The fabric of his boxer briefs strained at the bulk of his bare thighs. The circles under his eyes said he'd had a long day yesterday, too. You don't have to stay out here.
Sit. Keep me warm.
I sighed, but settled into his lap, letting him circle me in his arms and snuggle us beneath the blanket. Then he started to rock the chair with slow, measured nudges of his foot. Sorry to wake you.
You need to get some rest. You were on your feet all day yesterday. What's going on?
Just a bad dream.
Want to talk about it?
Yes. No. The nightmares had been my secret, my pain. Even when Skylar and I had lived together, I hadn't told him why I'd woken up late at night. Though he had to have suspected what was going on, he hadn't asked. Because the dreams were real. They were massive, and he hadn't been one for heavy lifting. I don't want to burden you, I said. It seems like you carry a lot already. He tensed. The rocking stopped. When I looked up, a crease marred the skin between his forehead. What did I say? The tension on his face melted away. His arms held me tighter.
You might be the most intuitive person I've ever met.
I don't know about that. I leaned my forehead against his shoulder. Just an observation. He started rocking us again, and for a few minutes, the only sounds were his heartbeat and the birds in the trees chirping their morning song.
I'm the oldest of my siblings. That's always put me in a different position with my sisters. My youngest brother, too. As little kids, they'd take their problems to mom and dad. The older they get, the more those problems come to me, especially after I took over the ranch. I'm the role model, the mediator.
Does it bother you?
No.
Because Griffin was the type of man who stood at the ready, always willing to heft the load.
But it is a weight. I need to be here for them. I don't want to let them down, and I don't want to fail the ranch.
Is everything okay with the ranch?
Yeah, it's good. Just a lot of work.
Do you enjoy it?
I do.
He nodded.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
I feel the same way about being a cop. He tucked a lock of hair behind my ear.
How'd you get into it?
My senior year in high school, I worked as an office aide. The officer stationed at our school was this beautiful woman. She was personable and gracious, gorgeous, but you also knew not to fuck with her.
Sort of like you.
I smiled. I asked her once how she became a police officer. I'd been struggling to decide if I should go to college or a trade school. All of the other kids at school seemed to know exactly what they wanted to do, and I came up blank every time. One day, I was in the office, and she was there too, so I asked her why she decided to be a cop. That conversation had changed my life. She'd given me 10 minutes of her time, just 10 minutes, but it was 10 minutes that had set me on this path. She told me that when she was a teenager, she didn't know what she wanted to do either, and while she was debating her options, her dad gave her a piece of great advice. In the absence of a clear ambition, serving others is a mighty purpose. She didn't want to be a nurse or a teacher, so she went to the police academy. I went home that evening and told my parents I wanted to find out what it would take to be a cop.
And here you are.
Here I am.
How did your parents react?
As you'd expect. They worried, rightly so. It was hard, really hard. Men don't always take me seriously. It's a dangerous job. But I believe in my heart that I'm in the right place. That because I'm a woman, I'm able to handle some awful situations differently than a man. Like rape, domestic abuse. I'd worked with plenty of incredible male cops, but there were times when a woman would only talk to a woman. Those cases, as horrific as they'd been, had only solidified my decision.
Is that what wakes you up at night? The awful cases?
No. I blew out a long breath. But like I said, I don't want to burden you.
It's no burden to listen when...
Talking about it hurt. The few times Pops had wanted to discuss the accident, every word had scraped and sliced across my tongue. That had been years ago, and since, I'd always changed the subject. Ignoring the pain was easier, wasn't it? Something had to give. Something had to let go. These nightmares couldn't go on forever, and maybe because I'd kept it inside for so long, the bad dreams were my heart's way of screaming for relief. My parents died 5 years ago. One sentence and my chest burned.
My mom mentioned something about that the other day.
It was on the 4th of July. They were driving home from a party at a friend's house in the mountains. They were hit by an oncoming car. The driver was texting.
Damn.
Griffin dropped his forehead to my temple.
I'm sorry.
I swallowed hard, pushing past the ache. I was the first officer on the scene. His body stilled. The rocking stopped again. It was my last year as a patrol officer. I'd already put in my application to be promoted, and my parents were so excited that I wouldn't be on the streets as much. When the call came through my scanner, I can't describe it. This pit formed in my stomach, and I knew that when I got there, it would be bad. Bad was an understatement.
When you got there, were they
dead? Yes. I found the other driver first. He'd been thrown from his car. His body was on the center line. The blood had pooled around his slackened face. He'd only been 18, a child. It was hard to hate a child, but I'd managed it for 5 years. It was a head-on collision at 40 miles per hour. My chin quivered and I slammed my eyes shut. What people said about time healing wounds was bullshit. No amount of time had made it easier to relive that night. Not an hour, not a day, not 5 years. Because each day that passed was a day we had missed together. Mom and Dad would have been so proud to see me in Quincy. Dad would have warned me about the gossip mill and done his best to shield me from it, like Griff. Mom would have insisted on visiting each and every weekend until my house was set up and perfect.
That's what you see in your dreams,
Griffin whispered. I nodded. Both of them had been wearing seatbelts. They'd been trapped in their seats, their bodies destroyed after their car had rolled 6 times, landing on its roof. Dad's eyes were open. Mom, her body, my eyes flooded. The words burned too much. I can't.
You don't have to.
I studied the trees, taking a few minutes to breathe as Griff began to rock us again. They didn't suffer, I whispered. It was instant.
I'm so sorry, Wynn.
Griffin's arms banded tighter, and when the first tear dripped down my cheek, he just held on. He held on as I buried my face in his neck and cried for the people I'd loved more than anything in this world. By the time I pulled myself together, the sun had risen above the mountain peaks. Thank you for listening. I wiped my cheeks dry.
Anytime.
You're good at it.
Practice. I've got 5 siblings.
No, I put my hand over his heart. It's just who you are. He kissed my hair, his arms never letting go as we stayed stuck together in the chair.
What are you doing today?
I don't have anything planned. Sleep. At some point, I'd have to attempt sleep. He picked us both up, setting me on my feet. Then he traced a fingertip across the freckles on my nose.
Spend the day here.
We'd never spent the day together. That had always been a boundary. And like the others, crossing it was as natural as breathing. Okay.
Chapter 14. Griffin. One morning spent in a rocking chair, and the world had shifted. Like going for a ride and veering off the main path to get a look from a different angle. And then discovering that the trail you'd been on was lacking in every way imaginable. I was in it with this woman. So fucking in it. The shift had happened weeks ago. Or maybe there'd been small turns along the way. Yesterday, during the annual Quincy activities, I'd realized just how different life would be with Wynn. The 4th had always been fun. Busy, but fun. Except I'd struggled to relax and enjoy the day. I spent most of my time searching for her, finding her in the crowd at various events. When I spotted her at the parade, walking up and down the sidewalks, her expression was one of concentration and awareness. Once the street sweeper passed, she disappeared, probably back to the station, and it took effort not to call and check in. Instead, I rushed around to help my siblings. Knox needed a hand at the restaurant for the lunch rush, so I stopped at the Eloise to haul in supplies. There'd been a 90-minute wait for a table, which hadn't seemed to turn many people away. I left Knox, hustling around his kitchen, in his element, and exactly where he wanted to be. Then headed to the coffee shop, because Lila had been slammed too. Some asshole had clogged one of the toilets, so I plunged it, then cleared the overflowing garbage cans. It was all hands on deck for the Eden family. Dad was the gopher, running around town to the hardware store or the grocery store for whatever anyone needed. Mom and Talia were helping Lila behind the counter making coffee. Mateo was at the hotel, working with Eloise to make sure guests were taken care of for the sold-out weekend. As the community migrated off Main and to the fairgrounds, my family managed to get together. We gathered in our family's regular seats for the rodeo. The coffee shop was closed, so was Knox's restaurant. Eloise's staff at the hotel was on duty, so we could come together for a few beers and hot dogs. The Quincy Rodeo was a standing tradition, much like Christmas or Thanksgiving. It was one of the few events we always made sure to attend together, even if that meant closing shop. Except that evening, surrounded by my family, a piece was missing. I hadn't realized until late in the evening, when I'd glanced across the arena and found Wynn at the fence, that the missing piece was her. Another shift. She belonged by my side, not standing alone. Especially not yesterday. I wished I had known about her parents. She'd probably worked all day yesterday as a distraction. Today, if all I could do was keep the distractions coming, then I'd bust my ass to make it happen.
"Your hair dryer is nicer than mine. I might have to steal it,"
she said, coming down the hallway from the master bedroom. After we'd come inside from the rocking chair, I'd taken her to the bedroom for a couple of orgasms before hopping into the shower. While I'd dressed and come to the kitchen to brew coffee, she'd gotten ready too. Normally, she went home to shower. Not today. Today, she wasn't leaving my sight. "The hairdryer is Talia's doing," I chuckled and handed her a steaming mug. "Sometimes my sisters will crash here if we have a family function at the ranch. Saves them from driving into town if they've gotten into my parents' liquor cabinet. Talia decided that since they're the only people who use the guest bedrooms, they might as well have stuff here to get ready the next morning." Wynn sipped her coffee.
"That's sweet that you let them stay."
I shrugged. I'm a lot like my dad when it comes to my sisters. Twisted around their little fingers.
"Also sweet.
How about eggs for breakfast?" I walked to the fridge. "Bacon or sausage?"
"Either. Can I help?"
I shook my head and took out the sausage. "Have a seat." She slid into a stool at the island, watching while I made a quick scramble. With it plated, I sat beside her, the two of us eating quietly. I wasn't one to talk much when there was food in front of me. I liked that she didn't either. Wait, was this the first meal we'd shared? I stopped chewing and glanced at her profile.
"What?"
she asked, grabbing a napkin to wipe her lips. "We haven't eaten together before."
"There was lunch my first day at work."
"That doesn't count."
"Then, no, I guess we haven't. We usually skip the dinner dates and go straight for the bed."
Sex had always come first, but it felt like we should have been sharing meals for weeks. Then I should have taken her out on a proper date, like dinner at Knox's restaurant or my favorite steakhouse outside of town. "Maybe we should toss in a dinner date." She held my gaze for a minute, like she was trying to decide if I was teasing. "I'm serious." Her eyes softened.
"Okay.
How about we do some exploring today?" I asked after we both finished eating.
"Sure."
She nodded, motioning to her clothes. They were the jeans she'd had on last night, and one of my black t-shirts, which dwarfed her, so she'd tied it into a knot at her hip.
"Do I need to run home and change?"
"You'll be fine. Have you ever ridden a horse?"
"No."
"Want to learn?"
"Not especially."
She smiled as I laughed.
"Maybe one day."
If and when that one day came, I'd teach her. "We'll do another kind of ride." So after our breakfast dishes were in the washer, we set out for the barn. "How about a four-wheeler? Ever driven one of those?"
"Another no."
"Want to ride with me or drive your own?" She eyed the machine as I filled the gas tank.
"Ride with you."
Good answer. I straddled the seat, patting the back for her to climb on behind me. Then I started the engine and set out on the road. We rode for an hour, following old trails around the ranch. Wynn's arms stayed tight around my waist, her head resting against my shoulder at times, as the sun warmed our skin and the wind blew her hair off her pretty face until I came to a stop along a fence. "This is the far end of the ranch," I told her.
"This is all yours? From here to your house?"
She pointed toward the direction that we'd just come from. "And a bit beyond." I pointed left, then right. "This is the center point. How long we just rode, it goes twice as far in both directions." The Eden Ranch was essentially a rectangle that stretched along the base of the mountains in some of the best country under God's blue sky.
"Are all ranches this big?"
"Very few." I stood from the seat, climbing off the machine to walk to the fence where a small cluster of wildflowers was tangled with the stalks of grass. I plucked a white one and a yellow one, bringing them to her. "We've expanded over the years, bought new property."
"Like the one next to Indigo Ridge?"
"Exactly. After a few generations of buying when land comes available, now we've got one of the largest ranches in this part of the state."
"It's beautiful."
She pressed the flowers to her nose.
"Thanks for taking me out today."
"Welcome." I propped a hip on the edge of the four-wheeler, looking out over the pasture. "It's been a while since I've done this. Just driven around. No task in mind."
"It's been a long time since I didn't fill a day with work of some kind."
"What about in Bozeman? What did you do there to relax?"
"Hung out with friends. Did some hiking around the area. I had a vegetable garden one summer. Skylar ruined that one for me, though."
"How did he ruin it?"
"He complained that it was too time-consuming, that instead of having our evenings free to meet up with friends or go to a movie or whatever else he wanted to do, I liked to stay home and work in the garden. Maybe I'll put one in at my house here. Not that I have a lot of free time."
"Maybe by this time next year you will."
"Yeah."
She smiled and lifted the flowers to her nose again.
"Maybe."
"Have you heard from him?" I asked.
"No. His phone calls stopped, at least I think. I forget to charge that phone all the time. But I haven't had any messages to talk about us or the house. I think his visit here was the end, but you never know with him. He can be unpredictable, which is part of why I stayed with him for so long. He'd act distant and rude for months. I'd swear we were done, then it was like he knew I was about to call it off because he'd become this entirely different person. He'd make me laugh. He'd be affectionate and caring. When I look back over our 8 years together, it was like living in a constant state of whiplash."
He sounded like a manipulative dick, but I swallowed that comment because I suspected that Wynn knew it already.
"He knew my parents,"
she said.
"That's the other part of why I stayed with him. Because they knew him. Or I guess I should say that he knew them, anyone else, and they would just be photographs and stories. And they would have been a stranger to my parents. That's not a great reason to stick with someone, but..."
"It's understandable. It was the reason why I hadn't brought anyone home to my parents. Because there hadn't been anyone I'd wanted to give them memories about. But when... Maybe it was time to take Mom up on her offer and take Wynn over for dinner." "Why'd you end it?" I asked. "You never told me that night he was at your house."
"He was sleeping with someone else."
She huffed.
"I found out because she called the house looking for him. Can you believe it? She thought I knew because her husband knew."
"She was married?"
"Yep."
Wynn popped the word.
"Apparently they'd made this arrangement, sex only. Her husband was good with it, but Skylar must have known that I'd say fuck no, so he'd hidden the affair."
"Prick."
"Pretty much,"
she muttered.
"I'm just guessing, but I bet she dumped him, and that's why he made his visit."
"You thought you'd take him back? Idiot."
"Skylar got away with a lot. He must have thought that eventually I'd forgive him, that eventually I'd pick a wedding date. I don't know. After my parents died, I pushed him away. He didn't pull me back."
"Because he was a fucking idiot."
"It hurt,"
she said, twirling the flowers between her fingers.
"We'd made a lot of promises together. 8 years is a long time to live your life around someone. But then I realized that we lived around each other, not with each other. I couldn't count on him. The promises crumbled. When I started peeling my life away, making it my own, there weren't many threads to untangle. The house is all that's left, and that's simply paperwork.
At the moment, I was thinking of tangling her up so tight she'd never get free.
It worked out the way it needed to,
she said.
I'm glad to be here in Quincy.
I'm glad you're here too. I stood, returning to the seat and the handlebars. The moment I was settled, Wynne's arms wrapped around me and the insides of her thighs pressed to the outsides of mine. She fit me, perfectly, in more ways than just riding on a four-wheeler. Keep going? I asked over my shoulder. Or head back to the house?
Keep going.
I grinned, glad she was enjoying this, and started the engine. Another hour later, and the sun was beating down on us. We'd worked our way past Indigo Ridge, crisscrossing through pastures and bouncing from one fence to the next. The ridge was behind us, and the only reason I'd come this far was to show her one more edge of the ranch so she could get a better idea of the size. The backside of the ridge was a massive rise, the hill covered in evergreens, but on the flats, there wasn't much shade. Without a hat, I worried she'd get sunburned, so I aimed the wheels for home. I slowed at a gate, ready to get off and open it for us, when I glanced up to the forest and saw a plume of smoke rising from the treetops. It was in about the same spot as Briggs's cabin. What the hell? It was July. Fires in July were not only unnecessary, but goddamn dangerous.
What?
Wynne asked, following my gaze.
Aren't there fire restrictions right now?
Yeah. I turned the four-wheeler around, and instead of heading home, we tore through the landscape toward my uncle's cabin. Wynne clutched me tight as we wound through the trees and up the road. The scent of charred wood and campfire reached us as we crested the climb and pulled into the cabin's clearing. Briggs was standing beside a pile of burning pine limbs, smoke billowing from its center. The orange and red flicker of the flames tickled the open air, sending sparks on the breeze. I parked and flew off the four-wheeler, racing over to my uncle. "Briggs, what the hell?" He had a shovel in one hand, a hose in the other. "Harrison, what are you doing here? Didn't even hear you pull up." "Harrison? Fuck." I yanked the shovel from his hand, slammed the end into the dirt, stepped out a scoop, and tossed it on the flames. "Hey, I'm trying to burn down the whole fucking mountain. It's a slash pile burn. It's under control." I ignored him, shoveling as quickly as I could. Then I snatched the hose from his hand, dousing the fire. Steam hissed and popped as it broke through the pile. A small cough made me turn to see Wynne behind me.
"What can I do?"
I handed her the hose.
"Who are you?" Briggs asked her. "Harrison, who is this? What the hell do you think you're doing with another woman? Does Anne know?"
"I'm Griffin, Briggs, Griffin," I barked. "This is Winslow, and you're in her way. Move." He flinched at the volume in my voice and shied away. Damn it. At my age, Dad and I would have looked nearly identical. I should be patient. I should take it easy, but a fire in July? We waited until the dead of winter when there were 2 feet of snow on the ground before we burned slash piles. The rumble of a truck's engine came from the road, and Dad's pickup skidded to a stop beside the four-wheeler. He flew out the driver's side, running our way.
"What's going on? I saw smoke."
I waited until he was close enough to throw him the shovel, so pissed off I could barely see straight. "Talk to your brother. He thinks I'm you." Without another word, I grabbed Wynne's free hand and pulled her away from the hose. She followed, silently climbing on the back of the four-wheeler and holding on as I sped down the road and away from the cabin. God damn it, I shook my head, my heart racing. Wynne's hold tightened. She'd heard me. We rode straight for home. I parked in the barn, letting the quiet settle after I killed the engine. Then I hung my head. It's getting worse. I didn't want to believe it. Yesterday he was so normal, at the parade, at the rodeo. Briggs had seemed exactly like the man I'd known my entire life. He'd gone around town with Dad to help for a while. He'd been at the rodeo arena, talking to his buddies and drinking a beer. He was so normal that I thought maybe I was blowing this thing out of proportion. Maybe I've been taking it too far, but you weren't. I shook my head. Something has to change. And either my father would push for that change, or I'd have to do it myself.
I'm sorry,
Wynne whispered, dropping a kiss to my shoulder. I twisted, taking her face in my hands. Those indigo eyes seared into mine. They saw the fears, the doubts, the frustration. They gave me a place to put it all. A place to just be real. She'd told me this morning that I carried burdens. I did. But right here, in this moment, she was there to help share the load. I dropped a kiss to her lips, then helped her to her feet. We smell like smoke. With her hand clasped in mine, I led her to the house and straight to the bathroom, where I turned on the shower. We stripped out of our dirty clothes and stepped under the spray like two people who'd showered together 100 times. Easy, comfortable, and as the soap cascaded over our bodies, the smell of the fire and the stress of my family disappeared down the drain. My hands found Wynne's wet skin at the same time her lips found mine. The desire for her swirled with the steam, and when I lifted her into my arms, pressing her back against the tiled wall to slide into her silky heat, nothing else in the world mattered. No drama, no family, no fire. Just Wynne. We came together with shaking limbs and frenzied moans, lingering until the water ran cold. She yawned as I handed her a fresh towel. Tired?
I'll be fine.
Want to try and sleep? Because I could use a nap myself. Our conversation in the rocking chair felt like days ago, not hours.
I don't know.
She met my gaze in the mirror, and the fear behind them was like a punch to the gut. I stepped close and took her face in my hands, my fingers threading through the wet strands of hair at her temples.
I'll hold you. If you have a nightmare, I won't let go.
Her body sagged and her forehead fell into my chest.
Okay.
With a swift move, I picked her up, cradling her to my chest. Then I retreated to the bedroom, setting her in the unmade bed and drawing the blinds. She fell asleep first. I wouldn't let myself sleep until she was under. And as I listened to her breath even out, I sank in with her. Deeper and deeper. She pulled, I followed. It had happened so naturally, this fall into Wynne, like I was out for a short drive. And when I looked back to where I'd started, instead of traveling yards, I'd gone miles. Deeper and deeper, until there was no turning back. I was in it with this woman. So fucking in it.
Chapter 15. Winslow.
Are you coming over tonight?
Griffin was barefoot, one step down from where I stood on the top stair of his porch. He was still taller, but it gave me easier access to his mouth. Maybe. I leaned in and pressed my lips to his stubbled cheek. His hair was disheveled, the strands sticking up at all angles from where my fingers had combed it earlier. Griffin had woken up first and come to the kitchen to make coffee. Instead of eating breakfast, he'd hoisted me onto the counter and devoured me instead. My man knew how to use his tongue.
Want me to come to your place instead?
He asked. Let's see how the day goes. My own bed had been deserted for a week. I loved my little house, but I loved Griffin's too. It was relaxing out here on the ranch, serene. I hadn't realized just how loud my thoughts were, how loud my life was, even the solitary moments, until I'd come here and spent a few hours in a rocking chair and cleared my mind. My head was full of cases and stress from the station. Despite my best efforts to smother those feelings, I worried about fitting in and my reputation. The moment I pulled onto the Eden Ranch, the noise dulled. The worries faded. Or maybe it didn't have a damn thing to do with the property, but with the man standing one step below me. Have a good day, I kissed him goodbye.
You too.
He propped a hip against the railing, his arms crossing over that broad chest as he watched me descend the stairs and head for my car. It was early, the morning air fresh. The weather forecast promised it would be a scorcher, and as I started the Durango, I wished I had taken another day to enjoy the summer sunshine. But there was work to be done, so I shoved the key into the ignition and headed into town. Griffin had washed my clothes yesterday, and though I doubted anyone would notice I was in the same apparel as I'd worn on the 4th, I made a quick pit stop home to ensure the place hadn't flooded and swap out my clothes for something fresh. The shift change was over by the time I arrived at the station. The night shift crew were likely in their beds while I filled a coffee cup and surveyed the quiet bullpen. Now that the 4th was over, we were trimmed down for a few days to give everyone some added rest. Except for me. I stifled a groan at the files scattered on my desk when I settled into my office. I hadn't earned vacation yet. One file always seemed to rise to the top of the stack. Lily Green. I flipped it open, a photograph of her death on top. A month ago, this picture had made me cringe, but I'd stared at it long enough that now the only emotion I felt was soul-deep sadness. Oh, Lily. I turned the gruesome photo on its face, then skimmed the edge of the one beneath. It was the last selfie she'd posted on Instagram for Memorial Day. Lily Green was a beauty, her blonde hair like strands of spun sunshine. Her smile was as bright as the stars. Maybe it was all an illusion. Maybe the smile and the sparkling eyes had been the facade she'd put on for the world. It was easy to force smiles. It was simple to lie and tell people you were doing great when the truth was that every heartbeat caused you pain. I'd spent a month searching for signs that Lily might have been depressed. I'd questioned friends and family. I'd gone on an unsuccessful quest to find a boyfriend. I'd dug into all of her social media accounts and even pulled her text records and credit card statements. But there'd been nothing to find. Maybe because there was nothing to find. No hidden confessions, no secret boyfriend. Chances were she'd gone out with her friends to have some fun, then met a guy to hook up with. Considering I'd done the same with Griffin on my first night in town, it definitely wasn't out of the question. Maybe he'd gone his own way and she'd stayed behind, suffering in silence, until it had just been too much. I touched the edge of her photo one more time, then closed the lid on the folder. Obsessing over Lily's suicide wasn't getting me anywhere. Because of their age, there was a limit to the number of questions I was willing to ask about the other suicides. My job wasn't to reopen wounds unless absolutely necessary. If parents, friends, and loved ones were healing, I respected that process. I was living that process. Some of my worst moments over the past year had been in Bozeman when I'd been going about my normal day, only to have someone walk up to me on the street and tell me how sorry they were for my loss. Even if they meant well, each time was like a slap in the face. People handled grief differently. Some welcomed the outpouring of affection and support. Others, like me, held it close to the heart and only let small pieces go when they were ready. Yesterday, telling Griffin about Mom's and Dad's deaths, I'd let a piece go. Lily Green deserved as much energy as I could give her, but Melina Green deserved space to heal. Today, that meant giving the case some room to breathe. So I tucked the file into my desk drawer, adding the other suicides beside it, and I went about clearing my desk. By the time I left the station at 6, my inbox was nearly empty. I'd had 3 meetings, and every report that I'd needed to review and approve was finished. The officers had taken my critiques of their reports better than expected. The lack of detail was less noticeable now, though there was still room for improvement. 2 of the files I'd been given, both having to do with incidents on the 4th, needed some revisions, so I left them with notes on the officers' respective desks. The bullpen was quiet again. The evening shift had clocked in, and besides the dispatcher at the phones, the other officers were out on patrol. I had collected my purse and walked out, keys in hand, to lock my office door when I nearly collided with Officer Smith coming down the hallway. "Oh, sorry."
"Watch it,"
he muttered, giving me a wide berth.
"This guy."
"Officer Smith," I called to his back as he walked by. He huffed and turned, fisting his hands on his hips. He was in plain clothes, a pair of track pants and an athletic shirt.
What? I'm off shift, just using the gym.
I stared at him, his ruddy cheeks and sweaty hair. For the month that I'd been here, I'd been kind. I'd been polite and professional, hoping that in time I'd win everyone over, including Tom. Call it wishful thinking, but I'd been making progress with the staff. They didn't need to treat me like a friend, and it would be better if they didn't, but they were beginning to realize that I was the boss, and I wasn't going anywhere. As I looked at Tom Smith and the snarl on his lip, I realized I wasn't going to earn his respect, his loyalty. He'd made up his mind, and it wouldn't change. Your report from Saturday is lacking. You'll find my notes on your desk. I'll expect to see the corrected version tomorrow. His nostrils flared.
Whatever.
Chief. The correct response is yes, chief. Another nostril flare, another snarl, then he was gone. I waited until I heard the door slam open and close. Then I blew out the breath I'd been holding. Tomorrow, I'd make sure I had a decent job description drafted for his position in case he quit, or he pushed me far enough that I'd let him go. Digging my phone from my purse, I sent Griffin a text. My place. As much as I wanted a quiet night at the ranch, I had a bottle of wine at home and it was calling my name. Downtown Quincy was swarmed with tourists walking up and down Main as I drove home. There'd been a shoplifter this morning at the kitchen goods store. Two speeding tickets, one a local and one from out of state. Otherwise, life in my new small town seemed wonderfully simple. Tonight, it felt like mine. I'd heard from longtime cops in Bozeman that it was easy to get jaded toward the bad, that you searched for crimes around every corner. Maybe it would happen to me. Or maybe this little town, even with its faults, would keep the jagged edges away. Quincy was home. I turned onto my street, a lightness to my heart. It vanished when I spotted a familiar truck parked against the curb, and a familiar blonde reporter standing on my sidewalk, talking to my ex. Shit, I muttered, pulling into the driveway. Both of them? I should have gone to the ranch. Skylar met me at the driver's side, opening the door for me. What do you want? I asked, brushing past him and heading for the house. I ignored Emily Nelson completely. Griff had mentioned she lived in this neighborhood. Judging by the leggings and tank top, she'd been out for a jog and must have spotted Skylar. She was probably looking for gossip to spread in her precious paper. Maybe that I was cheating on Griffin.
Winnie.
Skylar's hand touched my elbow as we took the porch stairs. How ironic was it that just yesterday I'd told Griffin about Skylar? What?
Let's talk, please.
About the house? Sell it. I don't care, but I don't want it.
No, let's talk about us.
There is no us. From the corner of my eye, I spotted Emily inch closer. Nosy bitch.
I've been worried about you, yesterday especially.
Yet here you are, a day late.
I figured you'd be busy yesterday and didn't want to bother you.
Or he'd had his own plans and hadn't wanted to cancel. If you actually cared about the anniversary of Mom and Dad's accident, you wouldn't have planned a golfing weekend last year over the 4th. Or maybe that trip was just an excuse to fuck your side piece. He stiffened.
I've told you, that was just sex.
Not to me.
It wasn't a real affair.
Oh, so you didn't really put your penis inside her vagina?
Jesus, Winnie.
He flinched.
Do you have to say it like that?
Yes. Go away, Skylar. I leaned past him. And you too. Emily's eyes widened. Did you need something? A new story? I asked her. Because there isn't one here. Sorry to disappoint. I was just passing by and saying hello, she mumbled. I waved. Hello.
Let's talk inside where it's private.
Skylar dropped his voice. No, you're not coming inside. We're done. We've been done for months. I don't understand why you're here and what it's going to take for you to disappear, but-
8 years. We were together for 8 years. We had a house together.
A house you refused to sell.
Because I can't.
He tossed up his hands.
I walk through the door and it still smells like you. I can still see you in the living room. I know I fucked up. I wasn't there when I should have been. I didn't realize it until I came home and it wasn't home anymore because you were gone. Don't we owe it to each other to try?
Try what? We wouldn't have made it, Skylar. There's a reason neither of us pushed for an actual wedding. There's a reason we never made that commitment. We wouldn't have made it. That was the truth I hadn't wanted to admit for those 8 years. There hadn't been enough loyalty on either side. I hadn't made our relationship a priority. It had always been an afterthought to what was happening with my career. There was a reason I'd been promoted so quickly through the ranks. I'd given my job 99% of my heart. Skylar had only gotten fragments. He'd been just as dedicated to his own career, and there were couples like that who made it work. But we hadn't shared an urgency for one another. I hadn't even realized what we'd lacked until I'd met Griffin. I hadn't understood what it was like to crave a person, to long for their voice, their scent, their taste. 8 years with Skylar, 1 month with Griffin. I'd choose Griffin every time. There's a reason you cheated, I told Skylar, because we wouldn't have made it.
Winnie, he stepped closer, his hand moving from my elbow to my shoulder. If you want to keep that hand attached to your body, you'll take it off of her right now.
The deep rumbling voice behind Skylar sent a shiver racing down my spine. The thud of boots echoed before Griffin stepped onto the porch and came to my side. The glare he aimed Skylar's way.